Today is another special day called Vishwaroop Mahotsav, which is the celebration of the older brother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu named Vishwaroop taking sannyas. Yesterday we discussed the dynamics of meeting and separation, and sannyas is another occasion that involves meeting and separation, because the sannyasi leaves home and his family to embrace the larger family of all humanity or all living entities. And so it creates a situation of separation for the family members. In the case of Vishwaroop, he was extremely attractive from a young age, or from the very beginning of his life. He was attracted to Krishna and the devotional scriptures. His form was extremely beautiful, and his personal qualities were all sublime. And he brought great joy to all of the residents of Navadvip. In particular, he would regularly visit the residence of the Advaita Acharya and take part in the spiritual discourses given by Advaita Acharya, and sometimes he would also speak. But there were two factors that combined to impel Vishwaroop to take sannyas. The first was that Navadvip, although a great center of learning, was populated by different varieties of atheists or offenders who did not appreciate the devotees, who did not appreciate the devotional scriptures or the devotional explanation of the scriptures. So he and all the other Vaishnavas were very distressed by the materialism that was rampant in Navadvip. They would, the materialists would ridicule the Vaishnavas. They would come up with so many arguments against the Sankirtan movement. And Vishwaroop was thinking, what is the use of living in such a place? How better to take sannyas and travel to the holy places. The other factor that contributed to his accepting sannyas at a relatively early age was that his parents, as all good Hindu parents, wanted to get him married. And he thought that I don't really want to enter Grihastha Ashram. I want to dedicate my life to Krishna. And it said that even at home with his parents, divine parents, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata, even at home, he hardly knew any of the other rooms in the house. He only knew the temple room. He was so focused. So when his parents started to, you could say, make arrangements for his marriage, and in any case feeling miserable in the materialistic atmosphere of Navadvip, he left home, which created a terrible sense of separation for everyone. Everyone, including Lord Chaitanya. It is said that Lord Chaitanya, as a child, was very restless, like Krishna. He would always engage in mischievous activities and pranks. And only in the presence of his older brother, Vishwarup, would he become humble and docile and submissive. So everyone was struck by feelings of separation when he left home. Of course, Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata felt it acutely. Lord Chaitanya felt it acutely. Advaitacharya felt it. All the Vaishnavas felt it. And they also entered the same mood. What is the use of remaining here? Especially without Vishwarup. We should all go to the forest. But in that situation, Lord Chaitanya gave solace to his parents and in a way to all the Vaishnavas. But later, when Lord Chaitanya manifest himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was giving boons to all the devotees, fulfilling all their desires, blessing them with love of Godhead, he would not give that boon to Mother Sachi. And everyone was astonished that he's giving this boon to everyone else and not Sachi, who carried him within her womb and nourished and nurtured him and protected him from the very beginning. He said, no, I will not give to my mother, because she is an offender. She has offended a Vaishnava. And I never will give love of Godhead to anyone who offends a Vaishnava. Everyone was astonished. How could Mother Sachi commit an offense? What offense did she commit? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied that when Vishwarup took sannyas, Sachi blamed Advaitacharya that because Vishwarup was regularly visiting his home and hearing devotional discourses, he got inspired and took sannyas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, only if Advaitacharya forgives her, will I bless her. So then news went to Advaitacharya. He fell at her feet, that you're the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are worshipable for me, and she fell at his feet, and the two of them were glorifying each other, and feeling very humble in the presence of the other. And in this way, she was relieved from her offense. So this date of Vishwarupa Sannyas, of course, the sannyas came slightly later, because after leaving home, he went to the holy place and took sannyas. Is celebrated as Vishwarupa Mahotsav. It's a full moon day, Purnima. And it was on this date that Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. And in the case of Srila Prabhupada, of course, one could say there were various factors, but the critical factor was that he was having dreams that his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was calling him to follow him. In other words, to leave home and take sannyas and preach. And this was experienced by Srila Prabhupada when he woke up as a very horrible feeling, that how can I leave home and leave all of the facilities at home and become a mendicant. I mean, if any of us were to imagine that fate, that we would have to leave home and become a mendicant, it would be it would probably shake us to the core. So Srila Prabhupada was having these dreams. And then one godbrother of his, very loyal godbrother, means faithful to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he advised Srila Prabhupada that you must take sannyas. Without accepting sannyas, no one can preach. Of course, in a way that's true, but in another way it's not true. Because recently we celebrated Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, and he did so much preaching as a householder. But although he was a householder, he used every minute he possibly could in devotional service to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains that he would come home from work about, I think, 7, and he would take some dinner, and then he would retire for the night. And at midnight, he would get up and engage in devotional service, write books. He wrote about 100 books and so many things. So he and Srila Prabhupada said 5 hours sleep is enough, and then the rest of the time he engaged in devotional service. And so he emphasized, Srila Prabhupada in this talk, he emphasized that everyone can preach. Anyone can preach, everyone can preach. It's not that one has to be a sannyasi. Even as a grihastha, one can preach. And he gave the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But in this case, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother advised him that without taking sannyas, no one can preach. And as a specific instruction to Srila Prabhupada, he accepted that as true. And so he took sannyas. So now we will play a recording of Srila Prabhupada discussing his acceptance of sannyas. The occasion that inspired Srila Prabhupada to speak on this topic was when he heard that his godbrother, Srila Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, had left this world. And so on that occasion, and this was in 1968, the movement was still quite young, so he had a, as he describes it, a condolence meeting for Srila Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Goswami Maharaj with the members of his society. And in that meeting they passed a resolution of condolence. And Srila Prabhupada composed a verse in Sanskrit expressing his appreciation for his godbrothers, as he said, forcing him to take sannyas, or being the instrument through which his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, forced him to take sannyas. So we'll hear the recording. It lasts about 12 minutes. And then we'll still have a few minutes, so we could discuss, or if you missed anything, I could read the transcript of that recording and comment on it. So, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. So listen carefully.
You invite His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, recorded on October 21st, 1968, in Seattle.
One has accepted in our
Can we dim the lights? Not too much, but...
I give a call. The medical accepting the last order of life. In my family life, when I was in the midst of my wife and children, sometimes my spiritual master, that he called me, and I was falling. When my dream was over, I was thinking, you must have wanted me to become a sinner. Oh, how can I accept a sinner? At that time, I was feeling not very satisfaction that I have to give up my family and I have to become a medical. At that time, it was a falling movie. Sometimes I made no point of my But again, I saw the same thing. So in this way, I was fortunate. My Maharaj pulled me down from this material love. I have lost everything. You are so kind. I can feel guilty. I have got no faith. So I'm not confident. This is the gift of God. We think that this is the future. They accept the impression. Nobody I say from the practical experience, I was thinking that how can I accept this? It is all on the mind, on and that's so much trouble. So, but I was sitting alone in the dark, like a boat. So this is my God. He insisted that Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, this pattern was during my time and time. It was offered to me by the Bishop of the Bible. So he insisted, not he insisted me, but that my little master insisted me, so me, that you accept. Because without accepting now for the long time, that nobody can become a preacher. Then he wanted me to become a preacher. So he proposed through the conference, you accept. So I am willing to accept. And then I remember that he wanted me to go to Western country. So I am very kind of feeling now in my life and his brother that he get out the weeks of my future master and enforce that decision the next this God brother is going in is a man is a mom he has entered his house and all so I need to pass a resolution of bereavement and sadness. So, and I of course one touch also in this connection in Sanskrit. So you all connect with time and send it to more. Vairāgya vidyāna bhakti yoga. This part of the man is vairāgya vidyāna. Vairāgya vidyāna means to become detestable to this material world. That is called vairāgya. And that is possible simply by the bhakti yoga. Vairāgya vidyāna bhakti yoga. Vairāgya vidyāna bhakti yoga upāya māha. The thing that like medicine, vichāya is having a very many. Then also I have experienced in my giant world, so many can get. I was very clever, I don't accept it. So my father used to want medicine. He did it for I have lost very well. I did not want to accept this remembrance, but this God brother, of course, you must. I must forcefully make me think. How do you know? There, spiritual life is the brightest future, but materially cannot see. But the Vaishnava, the spiritual master, the photo, he said,
Rasikendra Prabhu has a photograph taken on the occasion of Srila Prabhupada's sannyas, and in the center is His Holiest Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Goswami Maharaj, and he took sannyas with another Vaishnav named Muni Maharaj. He became Muni Maharaj. So they are on the two sides, and Keshav Maharaj is in the middle. So I hope you are able to understand the recording. But there are many important points. One is that Srila Prabhupada felt that his Guru Maharaj was acting through his godbrother, Keshav Maharaj. In other words, it's not that after the spiritual master leaves or is not present physically that we have no more access to his guidance, but he can guide us in many ways, and one way is through other disciples of the spiritual master. Another instruction is that Srila Prabhupada, you know, was feeling a great separation from his godbrother, who had acted as an instrument for a spiritual master. And another important point is that he engaged his own disciples, very young disciples, in subscribing, you know, to his feelings of bereavement and expressing their bereavement on the occasion of Srila Keshav Maharaj's departure. As Srila Prabhupada says, he entered the abode of Krishna. There are many instructions. And the verse, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, that line actually comes from a verse, or resembles a verse from Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, written in appreciation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, that he has come to teach, you know, Vairagya Vidya, that means knowledge and renunciation, or the knowledge of Krishna, which gives rise naturally to renunciation. Nija Bhakti Yoga, and as Prabhupada said, that's possible only through Bhakti Yoga. And then he said that the next line also resembles a line by Raghunath Das Goswami, in which he appreciated his spiritual master, Yadunandanacharya. He says that I was unwilling to drink the nectar or take the medicine of renunciation. And Srila Prabhupada recalled that as a child, he had practical experience. He didn't want to take his medicine, but his mother would force him. So in the same way, he didn't want to take the medicine of renunciation, but this godbrother forced him, or his Guru Maharaj forced him through this godbrother. And then again that point, why was he unwilling? Because he was blind. He was blind to the beautiful future in Krishna consciousness. As he describes it, he was thinking materially, that if I give up all these things, I will be the loser. But he says, no, he was not the loser, but he gained many times over. And gave that very simple example that he had 3 children at home, and now he has 300 children. And so this is a question that we all face almost all the time. Are we going to surrender to Krishna, or are we going to try to hold on to what we have, or what we think we have? Almost every moment we're faced with such questions. morning comes? Should I get up? Should I sleep a little more? Just the whole day we pass faced with decisions. Now, am I going to surrender to Krishna? Or am I going to try to get a little extra sense gratification or material facility? But again, we do have the principle of yukta vairagya, using everything in Krishna's service. So sometimes we may, for the sake of keeping the body fit, have to take some extra rest, or deal with material possessions in a way that they can be preserved for the use in devotional service. But anasaktasya vishayan, we should do it without attachment. And again, it's a basic principle in bhakti yoga, and mentioned at the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, that one should not be disturbed by tribulation in loss or gain. It's against the regulative principles to be disturbed. We get disturbed, that's another thing, but we shouldn't be disturbed to the point that we forget our duty or fail to perform our duty. But we tolerate, comes to tikshasva bartha, we tolerate and we can continue with our duty in Krishna consciousness. So, Hare Krishna. It is exactly 8:30, and according to that clock, which is the official temple clock, we have 3 minutes. So, any questions or comments? Yes, Vinod Bihari.
Maharaj, sannyasa actually means karmana nyasa, giving up the results of all our activities for Krishna. So is it necessary, by sannyasa, is it necessary for one to give up the family as such? Can you not be a sannyasi even being in the family?
Yes. In principle, one does not need to leave the family. But I had a very, I don't know if I should mention in such detail, but I did have an interesting talk with His Holiness Devamrita Swami, in which he discussed the wisdom of taking sannyas at the age of 50. And the wisdom is that at the age of 50, a person's physical health has not deteriorated that much. And as the years go by and one's health deteriorates more, it becomes harder to get out of the family. And the responsibilities within the family, or the duties within the family relating to one's body or one's wife's body or vice versa, husband's body, can increase. Now, that may seem like something that we should do. We should stay in the family until the end and take care of our wife until she dies, or take care of our husband until he dies. And there could be some truth in that. But then what about after the death of one or the other? Then there's the grandchildren. I mean, a lot of... But anyway, nothing against the grandchildren either, but then where is Krishna? Where is preaching? Where is repaying our debt to Srila Prabhupada and the parampara? I mean, if Srila Prabhupada hadn't taken sannyas and come to us, where would we be? We wouldn't be anywhere. I mean, I shudder to think where we would be. So sannyas is necessary. That sat nyas, giving up something for the sake of sat, for the supreme, for the service of the supreme. And so many, many, not many, but many of our acharyas have taken sannyas. And again, it's like they give up the limited family of their home or their town and embrace the larger family of all humanity, or all living entities.
Why then is it the forbidden in Kali Yuga to take sannyas?
It's forbidden in Kali Yuga to take sannyas because in Kali Yuga, generally people are not qualified, and so it's hard for them to maintain sannyas. And therefore some, like it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was a kshetra sannyasi, he lived with his wife within a holy place, Jagannath Puri. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments, as quoted by Srila Prabhupada, that kshetra sannyas is the preferred vanaprastha situation in Kali Yuga. So that's also possible, kshetra sannyas, to live with one's wife in a holy place or a temple and together engage fully in the service of the Lord. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wife was such a staunch devotee that when their son-in-law, Amoga, committed offenses against Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, accused him of overeating, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wife like cursed him indirectly. She prayed, you know, that let my daughter become a widow. In other words, she was like so staunch, so upset that let my daughter become a widow. It's better to be a widow than to be married to an offender like that. So that shows that his wife had a high degree of devotion to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and was you know, quite detached from mundane family relations. So yes, if one is fortunate to have a wife who's like-minded, or you know, the other way around also, and who are and both the husband and wife are in the mood to dedicate themselves together to devotional service, then you could say there is no need to take sannyas. But you can. Yes. Nivedita. Pass the microphone, please. No, there are grihastha couples who act as spiritual masters. Even Krishna and Balaram, they went to study in the Gurukul. the ashram of Sandipani Muni and his wife. So there is no restriction that one has to be a sannyasi to be a guru. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, kibanyasi, you know, kibasudra, that it, you may be, because Ramananda Rai, he was a grihastha, and also he was considered to be a shudra, because he was in government service. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born in a high-class Brahmin family and was a sannyasi. But when they met, Lord Chaitanya asked Srila Ramananda Rai to take the part of the guru, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the part of the student, inquiring. So Ramananda Rai said, how can I be in that position? You know, you're a Brahmin, you're a sannyasi, I'm a householder, I'm a government servant. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, Kiba Sudra, Kiba Nyasi, it doesn't matter if you're a Brahmin or a Sudra or a sannyasi, but if you know the science of Krishna, Krishna Tattva Se Guru Hai, you can act as a spiritual master. So there are many cases, as you rightly cited, of couples who acted as a guru. In fact, one of the seven mothers, Guru Putni, the wife of the guru. The guru has a wife, can have a wife, and she's also a mother to the students. And together they, you know, raise the boys in Krishna consciousness. But in those cases, the students would come. But in Kali Yuga, people are so fallen, they don't come. They have to go out. And for going out, vanaprast or sannyas or whatever. Yes?
Maharaji, you just raising the point of Ramananda Rai being, because of his profession, being classified as a sutra, and Mahaprabhu chose him to instruct him on the highest aspects of devotional service. Now, in this context, there seems to be a tremendous renewal of Varnashram. A lot of discussions going on, or seminars going on. It appears that for somebody to be classified as a sutra, something frowned upon in even in ISKCON. I mean, you use the word of a sutra, this guy's called sutra, not any intelligence. So it seems to be a formidable challenge ahead of us. How do devotees or the congregational members by some artifice get classified as sudras or vaishyas, or by their own volition accept that role? So how do we even implement something so challenging ahead of us? It seems to be a very, very difficult task. Any thoughts on how that could be done? Is it going to take many generations to implement something like that? Or is it even possible? Prabhupada said that it's 50% of his work
Establishing and
implementing Varnashram.
Well, the Varnashram that Srila Prabhupada wanted to implement was really farm communities. And then you have real, you know, vaishas. Krishi Gauraksha Vanijam Vaisha Karma Swabhamajam. So that was really what he wanted when he made that statement. You know, 50% of his work is undone. He was on his way to Gitanagari to establish Varnashram in the context of the self-sufficient farm community. You know, it is a very complex issue when we deal with devotees, because in principle, a Vaishnav is beyond Varnashram Dharma. And when Srila Prabhupada was talking about the Varnashram College in Vrindavan, one disciple brought up the point that, well, you know, Vaishnavas are beyond Varnashram Dharma. And Prabhupada said, well, not all are Vaishnavas, means on that platform of transcendence. Otherwise, why are they falling down? So the fact that they're falling down indicates that they're not really on that advanced platform of Vaishnava, which means that they are still, you know, somewhat conditioned by the modes, or, you know, attached to their conditioning. And so he wanted them to be engaged according to their propensity, because generally someone is more happy or satisfied when engaged according to his or her propensity. In Juhu, after the police commissioner refused permission for us to build the temple, Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan and he got the news. So he wanted devotees to come with him, extend their stay in India and come with him to Bombay to, like, protest this refusal. And so some devotees, Balavanta Prabhu, Amarendra Prabhu, they were actually meeting political leaders and so on. But then a lot of devotees, for a lot of the time, didn't really have any specific service. So Srila Prabhupada said that that we should spend the day in the temple. And, you know, alternately, you know, do kirtan or japa or, and read books and discuss. So after a couple of days, Srila Prabhupada asked Tamal Krishna Goswami how the programs were going in the temple. And Srila Prabhupada and Tamal Krishna Goswami said, well, frankly, Srila Prabhupada, many of the devotees fall asleep during the discussions. And Srila Prabhupada replied, all right, if they're not Brahmins, that's all right, then they can work in the garden. But then everyone should be engaged. But, so that's like, in a way, Varnashram, that you should be engaged according to your qualities, your propensities. But if someone is actually on the Vaishnava platform and transcendentally situated, he can do any work. If we read about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, they came from all different activities. I mean, Kolavachar Sridhar, one of the greatest devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, used to sell plantain leaves in different parts of the banana tree. So the main thing is the consciousness. You know, our god brother Jayananda Prabhu is a very advanced devotee. Srila Prabhupada indicated that he went back to Godhead. But he was ready to do any work. You know, build the Rathyatra carts. I mean, you could say, well, that's like a sudra work, like a carpenter. His Holiness Niranjan Swami was a carpenter before he joined. Jesus Christ was a carpenter. So we could say, well, that's sudra work. And when we first came to India, to Bombay, there was a press conference, and you know, so in this, so someone wrote an article criticizing Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. And in the article, or the editorial, or the letter to the editor, the author cited one of the devotees named Gopal, who was a construction worker before he joined, saying that, you know, a construction worker is a sudra, and now, you know, he's supposed to be a Brahmin. You know, how can a construction worker become a Brahmin? And Srila Prabhupada replied, I mean, he told us how to reply. He didn't have the reply sent in his name, but he gave us the points. And one of the points was that that in the Western countries, people appreciate manual labor. It's not like India. And they believe in the dignity of work. Now it's like people go to India. It could be anywhere. And, you know, they're sort of maybe startled by how dirty it is. And, you know, we have like such a high philosophy, and cleanliness is next to godliness, but it's like so dirty. Because everyone is too high to pick up the trash. They're too high and holy. So, but that's not Krishna consciousness. That's something else. It's not even really Varnashram Dharma. It's just like a degradation of Varnashram Dharma. So as devotees, we should be ready to do anything and everything. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that when he was working in Dr. Bose's chemical factory, the workers went on strike. So Dr. Bose said, okay, we'll do the packing ourselves. And so Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Bose were like, you know, packing the products and shipping them themselves. And because they were ready to do anything, they were able to break the strike. So Srila Prabhupada said that we should be like that for Krishna. We should be ready to do anything for Krishna. He was, I think, staunch or stubborn. He might have used the word stubborn. We should be very stubborn servants of Krishna and be ready to do anything. Yes, Brahma Samhita.
I guess one thing that kind of came into my mind during this discussion was I think that in my humble opinion, I think that so like in Srila Prabhupada's case, he was feeling somewhat reluctant. He was too take on this order. And I guess what I want to say is that, you know, we're supposed to be humble. And it would seem to me like part of being humble would also entail knowing when you're trying to do too much, you know, you're not ready to be a sannyasi, you're not ready to go to a certain level of Krishna consciousness. I guess so. How do you know the difference in, you know, making an excuse like that, or actually, you know, it could, and you know, because I have done things, to put it like this, I have done things, I have made mistakes, you know, thinking that I was ready to do something, but actually it's just a feature of being arrogant, not actually being old enough to know, yeah, I'm not ready to do this.
That's a very mature consideration. How do you know whether you're able to do, you know, meet a particular type of challenge? Because if you try to meet it artificially and you're not really up to it, then there could be more problems. There was one disciple of Srila Prabhupada's who took sannyasa. Well, that was another thing he did. Took sannyas after being married, but then on top of it, Srila Prabhupada needed a GBC for India, and he was visiting in India, and Prabhupada asked him, you know, if he would be the GBC, and he agreed. And then one night, he disappeared. And it was too much for him. You know, it turned out he went to Mathura and caught the train to Delhi and went back to America. It was just too much for him. And Srila Prabhupada commented that, you know, that out of sentiment he had accepted the service. Now, it's hard to know exactly what Srila Prabhupada meant, but I did consider it. That out of sentiment he agreed, but he didn't maybe accurately assess his ability to do it. Or maybe out of sentiment he accepted it, but then he didn't develop the expertise that he required to be able to do it. But Prabhupada wasn't very harsh in his judgment of him, but he just said out of sentiment he accepted. But one thing is that as long as we stay in our comfort zones, we can't really grow or progress. That's like a basic principle for anyone in any field. So we have to venture outside of our comfort zone. We have to accept new challenges, which means that we're not already equipped, but we have to develop the equipment. And, but what is a good amount of challenge, or what is too much of a challenge? That's like beyond our capacity. That's a very important question. And, you know, by sincere introspection, by chanting and hearing, by consulting with advanced devotees, we can get an answer. Otherwise, like you said, we can sort of lapse into a lazy mode where we're not pushing ourselves to go beyond what's easy and comfortable for us, which is also, you know, it's like quite bad for our spiritual life. So, the, you know, balance is always a very important consideration, like not too much and not too little. But some challenge should be there. And when you accept the challenge and, you know, are successful, then you can accept another challenge. And in the case of Srila Prabhupada, sannyas, you know, he was getting encouragement from his Guru Maharaj, from his esteemed god brother. Very good question. When I was a new devotee, I mean very new, I think. Anyway, within the first year in Boston, somehow I got this idea that I'm like really fallen, like just like completely polluted. And so one of my sort of guides at the time was Jadurani, who's the wife of Satsvarupa, who was the temple president. And so I told her, I didn't even feel like I should go in the temple room because I was so contaminated. And she said, "That's Maya. Oh, I'm too fallen to see the deities. I'm too fallen to associate with the devotees. I'm too, you know, it's like," she said, "it's just Maya." So it's good to, you know, check with others, get their confirmation or disconfirmation. Oh yes, one last question, Sarvabhauma Prabhu.
Seems like in the Vedic culture, we have to put in a Brahmin for householders to assume that they are more of an exception and very advantage. You talk about balance. Maybe some place in the world where there might be the nuances of visit, there might be some qualified. Also, there could be a guru, but it seems like, in general, it's more of an exception than a rule. So I was just wondering if that could be an area of, you know.
Well, yes, coming back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, kiba vipra, kiba nyasi, suja kene, yaya, krishna, tattva, veta, sehuha. It doesn't matter what you are. If you know the science of Krishna, you can be a guru. And so Sarvamogu Prabhu is saying it seems that there's more sannyasis than grihastas who are acting as gurus. Whereas it seems that in the past times there were more grihastas. And he's saying maybe we should encourage grihastas more. That's possible. I mean, I know some grihastas, I've encouraged some, and for some reason they're reluctant. Recently I met Hridayananda Das Goswami in Los Angeles, and he made an interesting point about family attachment being an impediment to preaching. And which does not mean that every householder will be under the influence of family attachment. You know, if there are certainly examples. But he was saying in a way that your attachment is like your money. So you have so much money, And if you, you know, if you invest so much in your family, say spend so much on your family, then you have that much less to spend on Krishna. So he was saying our emotions are also like that. I mean, he was, of course, a pure devotee has unlimited love, but that's, but for a ordinary devotee, let's say, he has only so much. And if he has invested a lot of that, you know, emotion or attachment into his family, then he will have less when he meets, you know, the fallen souls to try to encourage them in devotional service. And he said that ideally, when a person, you know, meets a conditioned soul, he should be able to give himself fully to that person. You know, that person should feel that, oh, this Vaishnava is giving himself fully to me. And then, of course, it does depend on that new person to what extent he'll take it up. But there should be no holding back on the side of the preacher in giving whatever he can possibly give to that person. You know, no holding back because in the back of his mind he's thinking, oh man, you know, how long is this discussion going to go on? You know, I have to get back to, you know, it's just, so, I mean, even sannyasis might have time constraints, but the idea is that, yeah, that we should give ourselves fully to the people that we're preaching to. And it's possible that some family attachment, material attachment, could limit us in our ability to really give ourselves fully to the people who we're trying to encourage and engage. But then, you know, that's not just for householders, but it's not for all householders. But like, yeah. I mean, they're devotees, you're with them, and you feel like, wow, like, you know, Like you're so special. Of course, I must say that someone who's like that, I feel, is Vaisheshika Prabhu. And he's a grihastha. His wife is also very advanced. The two of them are a wonderful team. And with Vaisheshika Prabhu, like, he makes you feel so special. It makes you feel like you're the most important thing in the world to him, and nothing else matters. So it really can, I think they're an excellent example of a householder couple who are doing everything. Like Acharya, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I mean, is doing everything. Very exemplary and inspiring way. All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada's acceptance of sannyas ki jai. Sri Vishwarup Mahotsav ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.